I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Under the Radar with me, Sean, your special guest. Tell the people who you are, Rona.
I'm Sean's old friend, Rona Cameron.
Oh, middle-aged.
Well, we're the same age, as you know.
And then we've a young person.
We do.
Hi, I'm Alex Edelman. I'm a new friend of Sean's.
And what age are you, Alex?
I just turned 26.
Jeez,
oh, my God. Do you remember 26?
I didn't even do stand-up at 26.
What?
No, 27.
Wow.
We've also got our travel expert, Oscar Herms, in, who's going to tell us about... So, when was the last time you had a holiday, Rona?
A holiday?
Yeah. Don't panic.
I've got really bad perimenopausal short-term memory loss.
Is that a place?
A year ago, I went to my best friend's 50th in France.
Right, just for a weekend?
No, it was 10 days. We stayed on after the children left.
What, children? You didn't mention children before that. Now
yeah,
it sounds
I've got
like
lots
something.
Of children. That's why I've not been doing any stand-up.
Okay.
I've got 15 children now.
And they're all in France?
Just had them all, just, you know, one after the other.
a litter.
In France, because I have trouble with intimacy. Because
don't
of my own adopted wounds, so yeah. I let someone else look after them there.
Because it's going to be a heavy podcast.
It is. Yeah.
Alex, when was the last time? Because obviously you're from, you live in New York.
I live in New York. So in some ways, the boring answer is every trip abroad is in some sense a working holiday for me. But the real answer would be 2012. I went with my family to Peru.
Mm. What, the whole family went to Peru?
Well, not the whole family, I mean, just my...
Oh,
me.
Sorry, I just banged my chair.
That's where Paddington's from, isn't it?
He's from darkest Peru, went to the lighter shades of Peru, like Machu Picchu and Cuzco and Lima.
So you went to all the kind of cultural places?
Yeah, of course we went to the... No one wants to see the deep cuts of Peru. You just want to get the greatest hits.
Did you bring back any drugs?
No, but while I was... No. This is my...
He was about to say yes, wasn't he?
Anything about Peru, and I can't believe
Peru, Paddington's from Peru.
Jesus, can I never get away from Paddington?
Well, of course you can.
It's one train station. You can go wherever you want.
No, it's the bear. It haunts me. You know, it was a beautiful thing at one time. I loved it as a kid. Of course I did.
And what went wrong?
Well, as an adult, it's come back to haunt me and in dark forces. Okay... My last relationship, yeah?
Was with Paddington.
Well, my girlfriend used Paddington as a metaphor in which to discuss her feelings of emotional neglect in the relationship.
Tell me how she did that.
Well, she bought me the bear, which has a tag on it saying, please look after me, which was to relate also to my adopted psyche. And every so often we'd be sitting around, you know, she'd get the bear and pretend to talk with it, and she'd point with the bear's paw to the label saying, please look after me. And it was a sign... For me, to the car. No, I'm nearly finished.
I know, I'm just saying I'm sorry for bringing Paddington up, is what I'm saying.
After we broke up, I got rid of the bear. I took it to Oxfam, and I thought, I can't keep looking at that bear who was now living in the drawer. And then I started to feel like I was neglecting the bear. It was living in the drawer in the dark. It wasn't getting any attention. And I got rid of it, and I thought, I need to start getting rid of all the things that remind me of her. And then the next day... The Paddington film came out, and there was a huge Paddington statue at the top of Primrose Hill. Where
that's bad luck.
Where I live. Here I am now.
I had no idea. I'm sorry.
Well, there are a few.
Jesus.
There are a few things. First of all, if she got you the bear with the premeditated idea of. Pointing at the
Alex, if you make the story even heavier,
Americans
I'm going to
so much
have
more
you.
Psychological than the Brits.
He is.
I'm just
Alex.
Saying it seems passive-aggressive, unless she thought of it on the spot, in which case it's heartbreaking and sweet. Also, the movie came out. The movie release had been planned months in advance.
That's
probably
true.
Not. You brought... It was a mere coincidence that
no,
you...
No, it was part of the karma that I lived through. It's probably predestined in my natal chart that Paddington film came out the day after that. Day after she gave me the gift, the person I was meant to meet, to remind me further of my feelings attached to my original.
But you're a happy soul, though, yeah?
Well, you know how I am.
Yeah. I haven't seen you for a while.
I'm still standing.
So, and you're leaving London soon, yeah?
I am, as an experiment. I'm going to Dorset.
Dorset's lovely.
Lovely.
It is. It's full of Tories and UKIP voters as well. And but it is...
Have you found any silver linings for any of these clouds so far?
No. And if you come back as a working class adopted lesbian, then you might share some of my...
Yeah, like... suck it up.
The greatest city in the world.
Yes.
Going with your bohemian family to Peru.
My bohemian Orthodox Jewish family.
Again, and you're Jewish. It just gets better.
Oh, yes. It just gets better. Being Jewish historically has always been a great thing.
I feel there's love in the air. I think Rona's about to turn, and Alex is the man.
I don't want to generalize, but I
love Alex.
I kind of have loved, certainly in the arts. Been more influenced and appreciative of all my cultural icons being American and Jewish.
There you go.
Ronna, you're a comedian as well. Yes, I've heard your name bandied as a stand-up comic, good stand-up comic. Yeah. You don't do stand-up anymore, though.
Well, this is the thing Sean's always talking to me about. Yeah, I do a bit. I do a bit of the odd appearance I fancy doing.
She needs a push.
I'm coming towards the end of a 7-year crisis, which has affected every area of my life.
Isn't
7-year
don't
crisis?
Don't snakes shed their skin every 7 years?
Yes, and there is definitely a cellular change every 7 years.
Yes,
and in esoteric terms, astrological terms, which I'm
so things are looking up, Ronna.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've survived. But
no, but we're about to start a new phase. It's going to be great.
We are. So yeah. Part of going away for 6-7 months is actually to write over the summer.
What are you going to write? Stand
up. I'm going to bloody write, and I'm sick saying it. The screenplay of my first book, perhaps continue with my play I abandoned, and continue with my notes about stand-up that I feel when I look at again.
Sounds like you're not going to be doing stand-up for a while.
Can I say what I've learned from the last 15 seconds?
Yes, please.
Because I feel like a pattern is being established in this podcast where it's you say something that's quite loaded with meaning and humour and then I try to unpack it.
You do. I put quite a nice spin on it.
Well, here's the thing.
So I've learned that you've written a book. You've written more than one book that you've...
Look at Columbo go.
I know. And so you said 7-year crisis. So I'm guessing the last time you did Edinburgh was 2008 or 2009.
Very good.
When was the last? 2008?
Yes.
Okay. So you're...
I don't see Edinburgh as the center point of all.
Let him speak, Ron. No, but good so far.
Please. So that you've got a quite distinct comedy point of view, but you've been... What's brought you away from stand-up comedy? I'm sure it was a professional thing at first, and then it seemed like a big shove to get back into it.
Lots of unhappiness.
Was it really that?
Well, in all honesty, I didn't really ever... You know, you have to appreciate that we live in a different era now of comedy,
yeah.
Right? It's become a much bigger business. There's a lot more self-consciousness about doing it. It's seen as a gateway to a lot of opportunities, and our television airwaves are saturated with fairly mediocre comedians appearing on...
But that shouldn't
shows.
Stop you doing
no,
it,
No, I'm
though.
Giving a little bit of backdrop to the history of when I started. So I think when Sean and I started, it was a bit like, you know, rough and ready, cash in hand. We were kind of these...
Oh, I've always paid my taxes, right?
Misanthropic. I had to pay back tax after the first 2 years because I kept all my cash for 2 years and didn't even have a proper manager. And then when I first became successful, I had to pay for everything. But that aside, because I'm not a money person, what I'm saying is it was a bit more grassroots, a bit more dangerous, a bit more organic, a bit more free, right? So yeah. When I was at height of my stand-up so far...
When was that, by the way?
It would be the 90s,
okay.
Right? But I had quite a re-emergence in the early noughties because I did a reality show.
Let's not just dismiss that. You said one of the best things ever in a reality show.
I did, yeah. I suppose.
Well, you should look that up.
What reality show was it?
The very first series of I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. But it was 14
were you on
years
with
ago.
The spoon-bending fella?
Yes, he was my ally.
Oh, boy.
No, but Rona came out and just... As you can tell already, Rona does not kind of
pull punches.
She will, yeah.
Americans would say you don't pull a punch, which I already like about you immediately.
But her honesty...
I think a comedian can get along with anyone else of any other personality type as long as they don't pull punches.
Exactly. We cannot bear a repressiveness in anybody's psyche. So what I'm saying is, retrospectively now, when I look back at me doing stand-up, whatever happened to me, whatever road I took, now I was at a time when I was the only gay woman out on TV doing, you know, he was doing comedy, so I had a lot of stuff, you know, other stuff to deal with. But I didn't really think about it. I didn't think about the value of it. I didn't think about the meaning of it. I didn't think how it affected me. But as I got to the end of a period of just not being able to go on anymore effectively in the way I was, I felt that the sort of energetic response that I had to doing stand-up was draining me and perpetuating in a way my early wounds, which had always eclipsed my potential to live in a reasonable way with myself.
But that sounds like you're not coming back to it, though.
Sounds like you psyched yourself out when I can already tell after 10 minutes with you in a studio where you're not doing stand-up that you have a stand-up comedian, not in you, but like you're a stand-up comic. Yeah,
it's about what I want to communicate now. That's I suppose the creative.
The other thing is, even though you were one of the first like out comics, you'd never really that wasn't part of you really, though, was it?
Well, I used to say things like, why are they staring? You'd think they hadn't seen two lesbians fist-fucking on a beach before.
That was not probably the best opener. I would have left
well,
that for the
end.
Well,
I had to do that when I did things like Jonglers.
Right.
If I went on stage on Jonglers, you know, fucking lesbian, you know, I wouldn't be standing there sort of muttering on about other stuff. I had to turn it...
Do you feel the elephant in the room? Is it a part of your identity? Because, like, as a Jew, and not just a...
No, it's similar.
Orthodox.
Like, I feel like it's a big part of my life. Like, it's a part of my daily routine. And so, while I don't... like, what I eat and don't eat and, like, what I do in the morning... Like, I pray in the mornings even though I'm not sure I believe in God. It's something I've done since I was a child. And so, like...
Who'd you pray to, then?
I prayed as a matter
of... Who'd you pray to?
It's a matter of ritual. You
God.
Pray... You just say the words... You think of the tradition.
The universe.
But, like, I find it very hard not to talk about... I don't talk about Jews, but I talk about being Jewish as a part of my life. It's hard to avoid.
And your ancestral wounding, for a start, is enormous. And we carry that from, you know, as Celts, as Black people, as Jews.
And
do you feel
as a lesbian, do you feel like that's a chunk of your identity?
Yeah, massively. But I'd say my number one identity, it would be my creativity, but in that I will have some difficulties in, you know, relating to others and trying to get others to relate to me, because certain other traits like adoption, lesbianism, cultural
swimming.
Background, swimming.
That's very
you
hard.
You love your swimming.
That seems very hard when your number one identity is not a aesthetic. Or a content. It is an aesthetic instead of content, or a profile that's very easy to. So like the fact that your number one identity is kind of ineffable must be. I can see where there's probably difficulty.
It's also, you know, I mean, in terms of the groups, and certainly in terms of male homosexuality and female homosexuality, lesbians are far overshadowed by the presence of homosexuality, whether it's, historical information, cultural significance,
but
contribution.
It's kind of sexism again, though, isn't it?
It is. But I feel the older I get, the more I feel quite a bit liberated in just absolutely, and this is a natural part of growing older for all of us, and it's amplified more in the artists, of course, because our vocation is to transmit, you know, our feelings and thoughts and view of life as a sort of human map for others to ideally follow, whether they're laughing or not.
I don't want to stop you there, but...
Yeah, I'm carried away. I've had two comments.
No, it's the thing of, like, I think stand-up rather than screenplay can do that much better.
I agree. And I'm absolutely with you, Sean. I am tortured in many respects at my lack of audience involvement, because I have got it within my
character.
You
don't strike me as someone who doesn't have something to say.
Yeah, but I'm not quite sure. I could do a lecture now.
Yeah.
But on what? Because how much am I projecting of my own pain, okay, now, onto what I say, because I'm slightly self-conscious about the fact that I'm approaching 50, and despite my sort of alternative views and my esoteric leanings and my knowledge...
We all vote green, Mona, come on.
I don't. Predestined, my belief in soul coding, and all that stuff aside, I'm aware that I have not got in place certain things that you're sort of expected to by this point in midlife. So I have some pain about that. So whatever I say, I'm afraid maybe some of my own projected fears and others might just go,
but I'm quite
no, we don't actually.
So, but Sean, you took quite a leap back in the stand-up after having been away from it for a while. Didn't you find that you had different things? I'm
guessing. Yeah, of course. Like, that thing of you growing as well. But I felt, I quit for a while because I felt I could say it.
Yeah, no, books and you,
yeah, I figured I could say
things
it better in kind of novels. And then, actually, I realised, you know what? I actually wasn't I wasn't as good as I thought I was as a stand-up. So then,
stand-up,
as I got better, I can say those things now. And okay, I wouldn't dream of writing a book now.
Stand-up has always... It's so funny, because like you say that thing now about... I disagree... politely, by the way, with two things that you said. Well, for, like I was, I'm quite new to the UK, relatively, so I'm only about 2 years into coming here regularly, and to me, that 2 years seems to be an incredibly long portion of my life, because it's my life after college, really, so it's the stuff that counts, I guess.
What did you study?
English literature and philosophy.
Wonderful.
And so... and so for me, I think that like the comedians over here, I like younger comedians here because it seems like they have more to say. And like the ones that are my favorites are the ones who are like, whereas in the States, I'd say my favorites are in their late 40s, early 50s. Like I like quite here.
Thank
like,
you.
Like
so you like something with a bit of depth.
I like Bridget Christie. I like Stuart Lee. I like Josie Long. I like a lot of these. Susan Calman's one of my
Thank
favorites.
Thank you.
I really dislike Sean Hughes. no, but like, and there's a fresh joy in discovering people who are like, again, with great respect to Sean, someone who's been established here for a while, but I don't know who they are. So when I see them for the first time, it's kind of a revelation because I don't have to stand up and be like, let's see Sean Hughes impress me with what I think Sean Hughes is like.
Mm.
So it's very nice. So I actually find British comedy scene to be very refreshing. The second thing I disagree with you with is that like my friendship group, I went to NYU, which is quite a like LGBT school, and I was studying the arts and English literature, so most of my friends were LGBT, and I actually found myself, this might be horrible to say, but I found myself much more, I thought the stronger presence in my social circle, even still, is lesbians instead of gay men.
Yes, well, so, I'm the same. No disrespect. I've loved some of my gay brothers and intensely.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
A couple of very long-term friendships.
I speak to my neighbours every so often.
Yeah, I think...
Do you feel like you've been... That you, as a first out woman on television, you've sort of... And have people cited you? Because I know there are a few out female comedians in the country who probably feel like I bet Susan probably feels some sort of not kinship but
yes,
sort of a debt.
Yes, I should imagine she does, and I think I've read a couple of things that she said about me, so yes, I would assume that.
So that's very, is that gratifying? That must be gratifying.
Well, I suppose I feel it's maybe without setting out to do anything, it is one of the useful contributions at least I've made.
It was quite late when you actually came out properly though, wasn't it? Because
no,
you were bisexual for a long time.
No,
right? Yeah.
This is what you always say. This is
I've just said it once.
Fantasy because of that one time I touched your penis.
Wait, I've got
a penis.
I'm sorry. I would like to.
It doesn't mean I'm not a lesbian.
No, but I thought you were kind of bisexual for a long time, though.
No, it doesn't mean I'm not a lesbian.
I'm straight face.
Sometimes do things.
I'm not frightened of the word penis.
Did you touch Sean Hughes' penis? Was this also during the 90s, or was this
Remember the time I touched your penis?
Yeah, it was
no?
The 90s. Yeah.
So you... I did
touch a female comics' penises. Yes.
Peni?
You get the plural, yeah.
Yes. Peni.
I feel shocked now. I feel so belittled.
I
never came out. I landed. Open. That's what my book 1979 is about. It's being out in as a kid, teenager.
Okay. I take it back. I apologise.
What it was is when I first did stand up, I didn't really think about how am I 27 years old, 26, 7. I didn't think how will I tackle my sexuality. I don't even remember saying the word sexuality in these days. I just thought, right, I'm going to do it. Get on the stage. That person's right. I've got to stop just telling these stories in the pub. I could be doing this. And I just wrote down some stories, pretty anecdotal, you know, a bit Billy Connolly-ish.
Scottish people always do that. Always talking about the times in the dark.
Yeah. Right. So, and I just got up and did it. But then, of course, given that I'm not a surreal or just a political comic in the content, when we come to talk about love, you know, human sexuality, it was hard to always talk in generic terms. You know when they break up with you. You know when you break up with you. You know when. So I had to start saying, this is an important point I've just realised. I had to start saying she. But then to an audience who's never been exposed very much to this before, they're all sitting there trying to work out, instead of paying attention to what may be funny in the story,
whether or not
why the person said she. So their brain's still catching up with that when you've gone to what you thought might be funny. So I had to say, I'm gay, blah, 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 big deal.
I've been supporting Simon Amstell this past year. And he's a out gay man.
Beg your pardon.
I didn't even know that. I don't really know much about other comics.
He's a very lovely. Yeah, he's a lovely fella, and so his audience, even though his audience knows him quite well, I feel like sometimes he deals with that anything that's not the norm, because comedy is such a tightrope act and such a game of inches that when you introduce anything that's not the norm, even if an audience is completely okay with it, and in fact maybe they're because of it, they still have to adjust to the change in light for some.
People are very basic, aren't they?
They are indeed.
Yeah, those plebeians.
But
those
it's
muggles.
Hard if you're a bit different to get an audience to relate to.
You would hate to, because I know you've done some, like you do the occasional lesbian night, but
or corporate.
That would be horrible if you thought you could only play to lesbians, though, wouldn't it?
Indeed, but it's easier for me to talk about relationships and sex and love and desire with a lesbian audience. And I feel I have a particular challenge with a lesbian audience in that, because there's a lot of repressiveness within lesbians, I feel, collective psyche about talking about our sexuality truthfully.
Really?
Well, that's my view as I want to be part-time psychoanalyst in my head, but really comedian writer on my tax form. I would like to challenge more, you see, the shadow of lesbianism, because when you fight for your rights all the time, and a lot of your life, particularly someone of my age group, has been fighting against long-term societal persecution, it's a very depressing thing to live with, whether you're black, Jewish, Irish, you know, whatever your thing is that you've lived with.
I find it hard being a black person most of my life.
Well, what happens is you can therefore not discuss some of the other more intricate details.
Do you know, I struggle with, in front of Orthodox Jewish audiences, I do some shows.
We all struggle in front of them. Come on, Alex.
But they want to hear about Orthodox Jews. Jews do this, Jews do that. You do this with your rabbi. You do this with your rabbi. Your rabbi, you know, rabbis never pay attention or this kind of thing. And so I just tell jokes about, because for me, my number one identity isn't being Jewish. It's being young and living in New York with other young people who are struggling to find their way in a tough economy and make a living and make an impact. And so that doesn't resonate particularly. I much prefer performing in front of an audience of younger people who are also so for me, the ideal audience is like a young New York City alternative night.
I tell you, the weird thing with me is being from Dublin, I much prefer playing Belfast to Dublin. I see Belfast as my home gig.
Wow. Why?
Yes, well, I find Belfast audience is actually easier.
Mainly because, I don't understand Irish culture anymore. You know, but Belfast is the same culture as London. You know, they've got the same.
And it can be very, very, though beautiful in all these other ways, it can be a real repressiveness out in the other parts of
Ireland. Yeah, and I feel
you get in Scotland as well. There's a parochial.
I love playing Scotland
thinking.
As well. But the Celtic thing is there, and I just feel it. very much in Glasgow and kind of Belfast and so forth. I feel they're my kinship.
I feel like maybe one of my favourite cities that I've certainly historically felt like I've really enjoyed playing has been Leeds. I really had great and Cardiff. I mean.
You're just going to name every city now.
No, right? I've had. Really, I felt very.
But what is it about Leeds then?
I don't know. I just seem to like it. I mean, they were pretty good. The Yorkshire Leeds audience on that debate as well the other week. You know, they were the best audience we've had on the debates. There's something about them.
See, I've been doing a Yorkshire accent for the last 2 months, so I don't even want to talk about that.
So you have. Right.
But yeah, no, it's kind of. It's really so. Alex, do you? Yeah, go down better here or in America?
It depends on. I mean, if you took my top 10 gigs from the last year, I'd say, you know, five are probably here, Australia, and Fiverr.
Yeah, Australia, I love that as well.
I just got back from Melbourne, and it was amazing. And I mean, Fiverr at home, I don't often get the chance. See, for me, comedy is the alpha. Stand-up is the alpha and the omega, at least for now. Like, I can only imagine doing... Like, I love doing stand-up. For me...
There's no question. It's a great... I think it's one of the greatest art forms.
Well, come back, then!
It's a final bastion of freedom of speech.
It's totally... It's total entrepreneurial.
I know, I need to come back.
You do. And I'm not going to ask you again, yeah. I'll show you my penis if you do.
What a lure. It's not. That's what he told me, and you never get to see it.
It's not.
Listen, we're coming to the end, but we have ignored Oscar Herms, our travel expert. We started talking about it. So, basically, Oscar, you say it's important that you basically do your homework before you go away.
Well, there's so many resources available to you, but I think without actually having to search the internet indefinitely, you get a sense of... It's all part of the adventure, really.
Well, listen, thank you so much for coming in. I really appreciate that, Oscar. You've been listening to Under the Radar with me, Sean Hughes.
This.
Yeah, I hope you got
really
some of that.
I really enjoyed this. Lovely to meet you.
I don't want to let you go.
We're finished?
I don't want to... Hold on. Hold on, wait.
Sorry, thank you before...
Are we finished?
There's a bonus track. What do you want to say, Alex?
I don't want to let her go until she agrees to... I think you have a distinct point of view, and I think you must absolutely go back to do stand up.
Put your penis back inside. Okay? You've been listening to Under the Radar with me, Sean Hughes, and my special guest Rona and Alex.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.